Welcome to Ah Crap, a Hellboy podcast, the show dedicated to the half-demon hero, hosted by me, Mark David Christensen.
And me, Kate Thompson.
Hell yeah, you're throwing the fucking goat? I don't know what, the horns?
Throwing up the horns?
Why did I say the goat? Just because I associate with the devil.
Yeah, like Baphomet is like a goat-looking
thing.
Yeah,
you get it.
Like a Satan kind of a situation.
You're rocking out of the
intro.
We're getting hellish on this podcast.
This morning we're getting hellish.
We're getting hellish.
And it is the morning. We're recording in the morning.
Recording in the morning. And you can't tell. We're that hellish. We love doing
so
this
demonic.
Show.
So demonic.
So yeah. Demonic. That's what the show is. It, you know, there's parents that were refusing to let their children listen to us.
Yeah. We're telling people to like jump off a building. Wait, don't.
Don't say that.
Never mind. Cut that out.
We're not, what's it called? That weird, creepy video that was online. The one that the bird lady one that was like,
Momo?
Momo. You're not Momo.
Yeah. I don't want to Momo anybody.
We're not going to Momo.
Okay.
And also, you know, screw the person that repurposed that person's art to like try to get kids to hurt themselves.
Is that what it is? I didn't know that's what it was.
Yeah, they found like, it's like some Japanese artist, I believe.
I had only seen images of Momo and never, I was like out of, like I'm far away enough from like Slender Man and stuff. Like I'm like, oh, okay, that's fun, but I don't really give too much of a shit. So I never did research on Momo.
I think I read just like a brief article about it and them saying this is where that image it comes from.
Ooh.
Yeah. I mean,
that sucks. That's like Pepe the Frog got all fucked up.
Yeah, exactly.
The guy who made Pepe is like, can we please have it back? And it's like, no, it's long fucking gone. You got to think of something else now, buddy.
Yeah, sorry, dude. Make a new.
Sucks.
Make a new frog.
Make something else entirely. I would steer away from amphibians altogether.
Sorry, bro. People will ruin stuff.
Yeah. That does suck, though. That must be such a bad feeling.
Yeah, it has to be a
to be like, I made this art, and now it's, like, permanently associated with alt-right assholes.
Ugh. What horrible. Like,
that would
imagine
suck.
Somebody getting hold of Hellboy that's, like, a group that you're, like, not wanting to
thankfully,
be associated.
Thankfully, it's so, like, ingrained in its, like, it stands up on its own. Like, that guy was just, like, an indie comic maker who was like still small, like if he had like gotten a bigger foothold maybe and been like more of a, but yeah, that would suck if somebody took that like Mignola's imagery and tried to be like, I mean, however you could try to spin it towards being like pro-Nazi, like good fucking luck.
Yeah, good luck, because not
but
right
people
now.
Take like, you know, Captain America shit. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's just hope it never happens.
Yeah. We'll stop it.
Speaking of like art, you had a little tip for our listeners before we jump into the further into the segments
is that
of the
count month. As an art tip?
I don't know. I feel like it's an art tip
because you're preserving the
thing. You're preserving art because when we get the bottles of beer from Gigantic Brewing, we're collecting all of them. I'm still trying to figure out what I'm going to do with them, the bottles, because I want to display them at some point. But who knows? But you figured out a way I'm laughing because
I hit my mic.
Kate hit her mic in a funny way. And
I tried to fix
my
it.
Thought got broken up.
Sorry.
It's okay. we're goofy this morning.
Yeah, it's silly.
But you can't tell.
Yeah. Too hardcore.
But she has figured out a simple way to be able to remove
the labels
if you just want to save the art and be able to display them versus art plus bottle.
Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of like little tutorials online, different ways to take the labels off of bottles. There's different kinds of glue. And if it's a dry glue, you can pop it in the oven on low for like 10 minutes and they like pop right off. This one is like a sticky glue that's on the Hellboy bottles, on the gigantic bottles. So you just, and I thought this would ruin the label, but you submerge it in hot water with just a drop of dish soap. And then 15 minutes later, you come back and it's like kind of loosey goose. And I had to like sort of start the corner with a razor blade, just kind of sink a razor blade between the label and the glass. But once I did that, I could like carefully peel it off really easily. And then I just laid it out flat on a piece of paper.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And it doesn't look like it really fucked up the color too bad. Like I was like trying to see if it looked drastically different, but not really.
That's great.
Yeah. Some people use like baking soda and like vinegar and stuff like that, but water and a drop of dish soap work great.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
It's a great tip for all of you out there that have those bottles and want to get rid of the, recycle those bottles.
I just didn't have a, I was like, I don't know where I'm going to put these. Like, yeah. Have a, my Hellboy stuff is really accumulating now. Jessica's like, what are we doing with?
Good thing I didn't buy anything on my vacation.
No, I mean, I would like, I still am figuring out ways to keep it, but just for the bottles, I was like, I got to just see if I can do this in a way. And I was taking a roll in the dice, but the first one worked great.
Apparently it worked. Huh?
Yeah.
How long did it take you to do all of them, or have you done all of them yet?
I only did, I mean, they take like, I put them in the water for like 15 minutes and then they came right off. So you could do it in like a couple hours, just like, you know, just dip them in there and then you walk away.
Cool.
And come back. And some people were like, for some bottles, like, oh, the label was like floating on the top when I came back. Like, I guess it just depends.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And then how did you know what the glue was? How did you determine that?
There's tutorials on Google, but like basically if you like pull it back and it should feel still like tacky, and then that's the like tacky glue. Oh. As opposed to like a dry, like crusty almost kind of a glue. Like, I'm trying to even think of what else I've ever seen that has like the dry, like I didn't run into the dry glue. They were both like the tacky kind of sticky one. It's like, I don't know.
Love it.
I don't know the true classification of these things. But okay. When I peeled it back, you could just still feel it was like a little sticky.
Great.
So I was just like, well, I'll guess. I mean, I still wasn't 100% sure, but I was like, I'll just throw it in this water. And if it gets fucked up, then I'll be mad, but then it'll go away.
That's very funny.
Yeah.
But that's great. I mean, it's a super cool tip. And are you going to end up framing them? What do you want
to
do with them?
I think I want to. Yeah. Once I have all of them, then I'll like stick them all in a frame. A long frame would be neat for like each one. There was this diner back in PA that had like all these old like antique soup can labels that were like framed in a long frame. And I was like, oh, that's so cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I might do something like that for each. I don't know if I want to do each one individually or one as like a whole piece.
Right. Well, you'll have plenty of time to decide.
Yeah, we'll find out.
Because you got one. We have not tasted two of the six.
So. Yeah.
Well, we haven't gotten to those yet.
Yeah.
So plenty of time. Well, that was a segment we like to call Hellcraft.
I'm a collector.
Oh, evil collecting. I don't know what to call it. I was trying to come up with something clever.
I don't know.
I just incorporate hell. Yeah. That's what the guy in the video said to
you? No, the guy in the comic, in the BPRD comic.
Oh.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Oh,
of.
Yes. He is
the
a collector. We will get to the collector.
That's how I don't think he talks like that, but that's
But that's a great segue because we're going to be discussing the first two issues/chapters of the Universal Machine
this episode.
We're getting into that next BPRD storyline. But before we can do that, we have a couple segments. This first one is really just, we just want to do a big shout out. People have been praising him, you know, forever. But just yesterday, as we're recording this, as of yesterday, October 4th, the man, Mike Mignola, has officially been inducted into the Harvey Awards Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
That happened last night. So congrats to him. I think that is a beyond well-deserved honor for him.
Yeah,
very
totally.
Cool. Do you keep up with the Harvey Awards or anything like that? I tend to not.
Not really, but this is neat. I'm like looking at the website now.
And also, what's her name? Who wrote Home?
Alison Bechdel.
Alison Bechdel got inducted as well.
Yeah.
Two great artists. Of course, we're focusing on Mignola, but.
Oh, you got Jack Davis in there too. There's a lot of good ones.
And a bunch of people from Mad Magazine this year that were posthumous.
I guess because it's like over now, right? Is Mad like not going to be published anymore at all? I know they kind of did like a refreshed sort of a run.
I think you are right. I think they're
I don't know.
Somebody could correct us because I don't keep. It's not that you've had a bunch of Mad Magazines for a while, right?
I still have a couple. Shit, I forgot to bring my Wizard Magazines.
That's okay.
Dang.
We have other episodes we're going to be
recording. That's true.
This isn't the finale of this podcast.
I was looking through an old Wizard Magazine and I found like some interviews with like articles that were talking about like the second Hellboy movie and a couple of things that were talking about BPRD. I was like, oh, that's neat. I'll bring it in. And then I tell you.
Great. Well, maybe you can save them for when we get to the actual second movie. If it's specific to that.
Oh, good call.
But that's a great find that you discovered. Yeah. So fun.
I mean, they talk about Hellboy a lot in this, but yeah, God, such a good magazine. I miss
it. Really. It's sad they don't have certain things like that.
Yeah.
There's so many websites now.
Yeah, just billions of websites to choose from.
With sometimes just the same info.
Yeah, exactly.
With a different headline. but again, back to this award.
Yeah.
Again, unlikely he's listening to us right now, but congrats, Mike Mignola.
Yeah.
Very cool.
That could be our sound clip, and then he could just listen to that. He's like, I'm not going to listen to 2 hours talking about a thing I did. Like, yeah. He's too modest to listen to a thing talking about his stuff for that long. Like, I feel like he would never.
No, and I wouldn't ever ask him to.
Right. It's not for you, Mike.
Yeah.
This is for us.
Not for us. This is for them.
We've
not
taken
you.
Your thing.
We own
changed
it now.
It, yeah.
Oh, gross. We're not in a forum. but great. Moving on to the next segment. We got, oh boy, email. We have two emails to tackle in this segment. So let's get to it. This is coming from our, you know, friend of the pod, our professor, our official Professor Pittaway.
Yeah.
He titles this email, Langdon Everett Call. Dear Hellcasters, so I know you got my translations too late since you recorded all at once. Yeah, he's heard what we did with that, but we'll get to that later. But I hope you found them interesting regardless. I did want to share a final thought from the dead before we move on. Too late, but well, of course, we'll go back.
Yeah, yeah.
Abe Sabian's real family name is Call. A call is the name rarely used these days for the membrane surrounding the embryonic sac containing the baby. Did I say that ambionic?
Embryonic?
Ambionic. A-M-N-I-O-T-C.
Let me see.
Oh, man.
Sorry.
Thank God I have a professor that emails us and a scholar of words as a co-host.
Oh, amniotic. Amniotic.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was like, what are really? I'm messing that up.
Amniotic fluid.
Sac containing the baby. Also known as afterbirth. This is
afterbirth.
I just wanted to
sounds
like
you're selling a toy. Also known as.
Also known as afterbirth. You like Crossfire? Well, you should try afterbirth. his email continues. This is significant symbolically as Call is the sack where Abe formed. And now he is born as a wholly new person. In a way, the whole Abe story in this series is him seeing Call for the first time and understanding that he is a discarded remnant of his previous life.
Ooh, cool.
Very cool, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm blown away by that. Like, because one, I'm like, I
never would have registered with me in 100 million years.
Yeah, I know that. It's just I'm with you. Yeah. I feel like
it's very cool. I'm so glad that Pittaway wrote us this.
Thank God we got a professor. You know,
seriously.
On the line. When we started this podcast, I've blatantly let all of our listeners know that, like, I love learning facts like this. Yeah. I tend to not instinctually go after them or. Like it's
I
not,
just wouldn't even know where to start with that. Yeah. I wouldn't have. I mean, at this point, I should assume that like no detail of the Mike Mignola's comics are chosen like lightheartedly. Like it seems like he does do something where it's like everything is assigned meaning and stuff like that. I should have assumed, but I just wouldn't like. I didn't think about that. Like I feel like I'm Googling shit left and right, but like the name itself, I didn't. Pay too much attention to. So it's really cool that he pointed that out.
It's very cool.
I
love this detail. And it's what an amazing little find. And like, in a sense, it's like an Easter egg.
Yeah.
Similar to the folklore stuff that we get on the Hellboy storylines. This is just a Easter egg for what his name mean and behind it. And again, it's something that doesn't necessarily change. It doesn't like, it's not like a twist or change anything about the character. It just gives this fun little Easter egg of thing about his name.
Yeah.
And about, oh yeah, like.
Just informs the story a little more. It's like, neat.
Love that.
Yeah.
Fun fact that will make you question your life choices. Cauliflower is also named for this same call as the bunches were thought to resemble a call. just like the sack.
Sweet.
Happy eating with that image in your brain.
Yeah, really. You eat this baby. I had cauliflower last night.
I'm fine with eating babies.
I'm fine with eating babies.
Cauliflower babies.
I mean, cauliflower. Cauliflower.
Told you we'd get hellish.
I had buffalo cauliflower last night.
It's so good. I had that on our
delicious
on my trip with Beth recently.
So good.
Up the coast in outside of Seattle, we had cauliflower
it's
buffalo.
Awesome.
I'm not a wings person.
I am a wings person, but I just like the buffalo. I like the flavor of buffalo sauce so much.
I like it on cauliflower, but wings are just I'm a little bitch with it being so messy.
I mean, it is a big mess. And I have a pile of obnoxious pile of napkins after I eat wings. Like, it's very stupid.
Well, you better, or you're going to be
Or else I'm just going to be a dirt. But yeah. Then, I like clean up and then just eat another wing and the whole thing starts all over.
Hitting that microphone.
I'm gesticulating wildly.
But yeah, I'm a big fan of the Buffalo Wild Wing cauliflower.
So good.
Cauliflower is so good. And then he closes out by saying, there, see, I can be brief too if I want. I just don't want to. Love you guys, the professor.
Don't make us ever challenge you to be brief.
Yeah.
We've gone on 11 tangents since this podcast recording started.
We know how to keep things long.
Yeah.
But what's funny is he immediately followed up that email with a second email.
Yeah. Also...
It literally is that. This is our second email today. Comes again from Professor Pitawed. It's titled Nationality and Other Stories.
Ooh.
He says, "Dear Hellcasters, I know I was going to just have a brief message, but I lied." I re-listened to the podcast and it sparked some things. And my brain being my brain, I gotta tell you about it.
Let's hear it.
Thanks for re-listening.
Yeah, really.
That alone, I'm like, great. Thank you.
Awesome.
In the last hunt, Hellboy is explicitly called an Englishman. And he corrects the individual in question, immediately saying American, actually. So we can therefore conclude that Hellboy does consider himself American, regardless of his derivation or parental figures. Oh boy, why can't I read?
Derivation? Where he's derived from?
Yeah, he's probably, God, Professor, you're so smart.
Can you slow down? I'm taking notes.
Well, that's cool. The last hunt, it's not the wild hunt. Does he say the wild? Is that the wild hunt or is the last hunt a different thing? I'm just wanting to know if that is if I'm forgetting about a story called The Last Hunt or.
I'm only seeing The Wild Hunt come up when I look up like Hellboy Hunt.
Yeah.
Maybe he meant The Wild Hunt.
Yeah, I think he means The Wild Hunt. He can correct us if he wants to on that. He wrote The Last Hunt. I don't know. But I think he means The Wild Hunt.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we finally got the professor.
Yeah, right.
We got him in the corner.
I'd probably be like, no, dummies, it's this thing from...
He probably is right.
Yeah.
Or it's like, yeah, whatever he means.
Yeah.
It's very cool that now we have a definitive to what he considers himself, which is American.
Yeah.
Very cool. We haven't gotten to that, of course, in our readings as of yet. But then he continues, as to accent, I grew up in Kansas City, then moved to the East Coast. This means I was raised in one accent, Midwest, and then transitioned to a new place with a different accent, D.C. area. After high school, I moved to Baltimore, which has yet another speech pattern. I can tell you I picked up vocal mannerisms from all of those places and more. My father worked for airlines most of my life, so I traveled a lot. So, for example, I like some older Missourians, pronounce the state name as not Missouri. So
Missouri.
Instead of Missouri.
Ooh.
My sister, on the other hand, says Missouri, despite being raised in the exact same places by the same people. I also crossed my sevens because I learned I could from a German teacher, and my handwriting is terrible, so I started doing it to help others differentiate my
from
sevens from my nines.
Oh, from your nines.
Don't judge me.
I crossed my sevens, too.
Oh, really?
I thought it was for ones, though. I don't know. But, I mean, for me, I mean, I'm sure it could be, like, to differentiate between any of them.
Yeah, I don't cross any of it.
Yeah.
I don't even cross my T's. It's confusing.
I never dot my eyes.
I never dot my eyes. You know, everyone's super confused, but I'm like,
this makes a lot of sense. I know. We never do.
Please do not ask Dave to write anything. And he continued.
That's so funny. Do you really not cross your T's?
No, that's a total joke.
For a second, I bought it. I was like, wait a minute.
Because I'm a fucking good actor. And I just thought it would be funny. Then he continues. So I expect pinpointing Hellboy's exact accent would be difficult. In addition, Professor Broom was often away during his childhood, and due to his growth being abnormal from a human standpoint, we don't know how that would affect influencing factors. I expect he would have an American accent on most things. For example, I doubt he pronounces the L in Colonel, but he also must retain something of the accent if the individual in the last hunt, I think he means Wild Hunt again, assumed he was English. But since America was once an English colony and the individual is older than your average human, he may not recognize a difference. Do you like how I'm dancing around spoilers? Because it's hard. I think this is great. I love this is further information and discussion about what we discussed when we had that question from our other listener.
Yeah.
Which was, it's just awesome. I also thought about this, I think off mic, is like maybe he sends mid-Atlantic? What is that like where it's proper speech, where it's not
Yeah, like mid-Atlantic or transatlantic.
Transatlantic, accent, yeah. Accent. I was like,
they're the same thing.
Is that true?
Okay, yeah.
I thought he might sound like that.
Oh, like an old-timey movie actor or something?
Yeah, just because he'd or like at times because he'd be like going in between the two.
Yeah.
Of like sort of trying to mimic who he might not be around all the time, which is Broom.
Yeah.
And then around the Americans. So the combination would be a sort of something like that maybe.
Yeah.
And that to me would be, we haven't read this story, but what Professors is pointing at is like perhaps that could be to me like if he's talking a little bit like that, somebody'd be like, where are you from? You know?
Yeah. Like he might correct it quickly.
Yeah.
Or he'd be like, it's in the garage, and they'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Excuse me, Hellboy? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very cool. Good thoughts on all of that. Now you mentioned the board game, which gives me an excuse to bring it up. Johan's obsessive researching behavior is in the game as his deck of Doom card. So there's absolutely a parallel with this comic. If anyone from Mantic listens to this podcast, I just want to say that I need the Seraphim is the plural. The Seraph. So he's saying Seraphim is the plural as a model.
Got it.
Cool. The combination of the hard and soft areas and the waving skin flaps. Ugh. I just really want to paint that. I've already heard.
They are so cool looking.
Yeah, they're very cool. And then he says, I've already heard reports that they are working on a Daimyo model, so I'll be patient on that. They must. They have tons of storylines already. Box of Evil and a couple of others already out, which I don't have because I don't have that money.
Yeah.
I also think of Guy Davis for Abe's look just like you guys. I think it's because for all of Mignola's many virtues, his drawing of Abe was always so stiff. Guy Davis gives him personality and facial expression. In addition, he very carefully made design choices to tie Abe and Langdon together visually.
Yeah.
I 100%. I think we've already mentioned, but agree.
Yeah.
I really do associate Abe now so much with Guy Davis.
Yeah.
Not that I didn't like him prior, and he was very well formed. It's just now I'm like, oh, that's it. That's the definitive.
He like really comes into his own as a BPRD character.
Yeah, and less of like a side character.
Yeah.
Because that's what we sort of associated with in the Hellboy book.
Yeah.
Until he leaves. Very cool.
Yeah.
Then his last statement is, there's a part of the sketchbook in the back of the Trade for the Dead where they spell out explicitly that the Seraph bursts out of Gunter's chest and his skin forms the wings floating behind the creature. Cool detail, because it's something we discussed, like what's happening with him. So his flesh forms the maggot grub portion with the iron-like chitinous mask for the face. and his skin is floating in diaphanous halo behind. So when the flesh reverts to Gunter, his skin is still peeled off. Oh, that's yeah. why he's... So his California raisin, thanks, Kate, form is him flayed of his skin. Hence why he seems to be in such pain. Ugh. He's handling it pretty damn well for being yeah. fucking skinned. And yeah. I'm not saying he's not in pain, but he's just like...
Yeah.
I'd be like, fucking kill me.
Yeah, I'd be screaming. Whatever sounds I could make is what I'd be doing.
That's great. Sorry, I didn't read the sketchbook in the back. Sometimes I don't read all those details. Or sometimes I've been doing a weird thing. I don't know about you, Kate. I have not been reading any of the... this is a dumb habit of mine. I don't read any of the sketchbooks until we finish everything in that
book.
Book.
I don't think that's... I mean, you're just going through it. Like, it's kind of a... Because we I don't know. That's fine.
Because sometimes we've left one volume to go to another because we're going off a different order than
we're hopping back and forth.
So I'm like, well, I'm not going to read like the afterword.
You might read something or see something that you're like, oh shit, I wish I didn't spoil that for myself.
Yeah. So I'm being very meticulous about that, especially on the BPRD stuff. But that's very cool. I love these details. And he says, and he just finishes off by saying, okay, now I'm done. Love you guys, the professor.
Love you.
We really appreciate these emails.
Yeah.
This insight is wonderful. That's why we call you the professor. Those were great. Thank you so much. Your additions to this, professor, and all of you listeners always enhance the show.
Yeah.
So we really appreciate that. It. That is this week's segment of Oh Boy Email. Drum solo's back. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to jump right into the first two issues/chapters of The Universal Machine.
Yeah.
Hello, listeners. We have a very cool and big announcement for the finale of this season of Aw Crap, a Hellboy podcast. To cap off season 3, we are going to do our first ever live show.
Yeah! It's going to be Saturday, November 2nd from 5 to 7 at the amazing Arsenal Comics and Games. We're going to be covering Hydra the Lion. And if you guys are in the area close to Arsenal Comics and Games, which is located at 1601 Newbury Road, Thousand Oaks, California, 91320, then come on by.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We're very excited to do a live recording of this show with an audience. We hope we have like a rambunctious audience. I say that because we have one, first off, as Kate said, we are covering the Hydra and the Lion. It's going to be the capper for season 3, one-shot Hellboy story. But we have great guests line up that are directly from Arsenal Comics and Games. We got the owner, Timmy Hugh. We have Matthew Wilson and Aaron Cornelius. We have a lot of guests that love Hellboy as much as you. But in addition to that, you will be provided the audience, an audience mic. Now, what does that mean? Well, that means that we're going to set up a mic that'll allow you to chime in. Of course, you got to be polite and don't cut anybody off.
Yeah, don't be a dick about it.
But we want to hear your input as we go through the don't be a dick about it is going to be the rule. There'll be an audience mic so you can chime in, give your thoughts in regards to the Hydra and the Lion as we go through those pages live on Saturday, November 2nd. And also, in addition to that, there's going to at least be one giveaway.
Oh, yeah. We got to be giving something away.
Yeah.
You came all the way out to Thousand Oaks.
You're going to get something.
You're going to get something.
And it's not just going to be our faces in real time. But that's going to be it. Our first very live show will take place again on Saturday, November 2nd, 5 to 7 p.m. at Arsenal Comics and Games at 1610-1 Newbury Road, California, 91320. That is Thousand Oaks. It's going to be a great time. You know what I think it needs? You know how great it is? I think it needs a drum roll, okay? Welcome back to Aw Crap, a Hellboy podcast, the show dedicated to the half-demon hero, hosted by me, Mark David Christensen.
And me, Kate Thompson. Yeah. And today we're talking about BPRD, The Universal Machine.
Whoa.
Yeah. Written by Mike Mignola and John R. Cutie. Illustrated by Guy Davis with Mike Mignola. But these first two are Guy Davis. Colored by Dave Stewart, lettered by Clem Robbins, edited by Scott Alley, and originally published back in, as BPRD Universe Machine 1 through 5 in April through August of 2006. So we get like the color cover in this version, which is neat. You still don't have all the like title and everything, but it's like very cool. We get the remains of Roger on the front here in front of an as yet unknown stone building.
Yeah.
And some like symbols here. We just have like the sun and the moon and some stars, some celestial stuff all around like Roger here. Really neat.
Yeah, it's a very neat and also very like probably the most, I'm going to go on a limb and say the most mysterious of all covers of as of yet.
Yeah, you really only get like the smallest amount of information. And there's like, we still don't know what's going to happen with Roger. And then we don't know the setting or anything like that. We like, it's very much like a big question mark. It's cool.
Yeah, very much so.
And then, yeah, the issue itself starts off with Abe and Daimyo overseeing the like bombing of the site where the where Katha Hem emerged. And they're kind of just talking about it like, well, we better do this just in case. We would be, it would be silly of us to a week later be like, we should have really bombed that. And then they're just talking about the level of destruction, how many people were killed, like 1,700 dead in this city, and like the city itself is all destroyed. And they just keep, Daimyo keeps thinking about Roger, and then it cuts over to Kate and Liz looking down at Roger, kind of thinking about how they as of yet don't know how to like regrow homunculi tissue.
Yeah.
But Johan's not giving up. He's like looking through all of these books, but they're in code and it's tough. Like they don't know what they're going to do. Kate gets a call that she is late for a meeting. It like cuts to that meeting and she's meeting with
Andrew Devon.
Devon. Yeah. So they're just kind of talking about, I guess he's like also a specialist who is like great at translating or like knows about these kind of like ancient texts and stuff like that. And he's just like kind of there because he's like super interested in the book that they're looking for, the Flamma Recunditis. They're talking about like, okay, you have this secret fire book. I want to check that out. You're also looking for this other crazy rare book that's like a phantom that's only been spoken about and never like seen before. And I'll help you find it. So he's going to go with Kate to this part of France to Ableben?
You asked me?
I'm asking just the
France?
World.
Yeah.
Ableben, France. Yeah. So they're, this is like such a flow. Like this comic is like such a flow. It feels so cinematic. Like, previous BPRDs have, but like I feel like they're really just like rolling through in a really like smooth way.
Yeah, I think they're the smooth, but there's is so really much elegant. In these storylines.
For how much they have to get out, I feel like they do it really efficiently in this first issue. Yeah, it cuts right to, from like a picture that Devon is holding to the town itself, but now there's no like, well, actually, the picture he was holding had no, like, structure on the top of the hill, but we'll see about that in a second. Yeah, so there's, like, this little town at the foot of a hill. They're kind of, like, walking up. Kate's talking about how we got to get this book, but we're not going to do it just by going in there and being like, I'm going to buy your book. We have to be his friend and have to know about the history of the town. And, like, collectors like this are weirdos, and you got to court them kind of and be like, I deserve to have this book.
Yeah.
If we're going to get this thing and try to save Roger. So she's talking about the history of the town. There was this rich guy at the top of the hill who had this crazy collection of all kinds of weird shit. He had like a huge menagerie, and among them was something that people thought was a werewolf, but it was probably just a gorilla or something.
Yeah, like a bamboo.
Yeah.
It's a bamboo baboon. I saw it at the movie Ad Astra that has a baboon in it. A bamboo. And I since then I can't feel like I can't say that word of
bamboon. I feel bamboo. Like that's a really strong baboon.
I am very bad today.
Because you're putting bamboo together with it. Now I'm not saying it.
What is wrong with me?
I don't know. No, nothing. You're fine. Those are that could happen to anyone. Yeah, so she's just talking about like, so this rich guy was here. He kind of weirded out the locals. Some kids started going missing and they were like, it's this guy. He's feeding all of his monsters, our kids. We got to go up there and set him straight. And then this huge storm rolls in while the riot is happening at this castle where he lives, and structure is like completely destroyed. And Kate's just like, well, we don't know for sure what exactly happened. You know, the most elusive part of history are the facts.
Yeah.
So like her and Devin are just kind of talking about that. Like, so the town is like created from pieces of the rubble of that destruction of that. Like, however, it was either like a bomb or some kind of like fantastical situation. Some
yeah.
Kind
it might
of, like,
be a little more mystical.
Yeah. So they don't know yet. They get to this guy's shop. Oh, and there's like a little like you kind of like pay attention to this part of the story sort of thing. About 100 years later, the curse was the curse of the Marquis de Fabre.
Yeah.
Was expunged by Pope Sixtus V. The people returned to the city and the most using the most readily available material. So it's like the pieces of the destroyed thing. But
yeah,
so that specific Pope expunged the curse that was there. And yeah, so that's like pay
attention.
So that's
where we're at. Yeah, pay attention to it for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, knowing that will make me the collector's friend. Sure, if we can find him. So they open up the, like walk into the shop as they find it. And it cuts back to the BPRD headquarters in Colorado. Daimyo comes in saying, you know, oh, Kate went on vacation. Liz is like, no, she's trying to find this book to help revive Roger.
Right.
Remember Roger, your friend? And Daimyo's like, he's dead. So
they're all mourning in their or grieving in their own way. And Daimyo seems to be the kind of guy that's like, just move on.
Well, yeah, I guess like as a soldier, like they all have like their own like philosophical standpoints on like death and what it is. And mm-hmm. they really kind of explore that in this whole storyline, which is really neat. You do get to learn so much about all of them, not just their backstories, but just their like stance on death and dying and everything. And yeah.
Yeah, really totally. Cool. I mean, we definitely get a lot from this story. We have that overarching humongous, but now we're about to open up like, oh, let's get some backstory on all of our leads.
Everybody, yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah, Daimyo's like, he's clearly sad, but he's like, poor Roger's dead. Death is complicated. Jesus, Johan. Like,
it scared
Johan
him.
Johan like says it from the back of the room. Why the hell are you hiding back there? You almost gave me a heart attack. Or you want to give me a heart attack? Like, oh, sorry. So like, Johan's back there. And this is just like the first of Daimyo putting his like foot in his mouth, kind of. Not exactly, because he's not like embarrassed about it. But he's like, he's saying shit to Johan like, how can you say death is relative when faced with that? The fact that like Roger no longer has a head or a body. He's like, how can you say death is relative? And then it's just a panel of Johan sitting there as a disembodied, like ectoplasmic being in a suit who doesn't have a head or a body. And he's just like, you know, you can't like see his facial expression, but you can imagine him, his like giving pause to that statement.
Yeah. It's perfectly done. The pacing is beautiful.
And the fact that, and then they also let Liz kind of chime in and being like, ask the man who is dead for 3 days. So she's like pointing out the hypocrisy. Like, not only is he saying like, he's saying this to Johan, who has no corporeal form. And also he himself was dead for 3 days and yeah. now is sitting and drinking coffee in the kitchen. So it's like, yeah, it's like, shut up, dude. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We're like, what? You know, let's talk about you as well.
Yeah.
You're among all of us. I think it's also coming back to like sort of up to this point, Daimyo's sort of kept himself very separate, right?
Yeah.
And without saying it, he's sort of treated all of the BPRD agents as freaks in a sense, right? What they,
yeah.
Like, not, I wouldn't say he's been rude or called them freaks or excluded them, but he sort of has sort of like kept it too close to the chest, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, he's not really letting himself get close to anyone.
Yeah, and then he did, and that person got fucking blown away.
Yeah.
So it's like funny that this is also bringing it back to be like without in better, better writing from them saying, we told you you're one of us. Like, yeah, you're one of us. Don't act like you're not.
Yeah, you freak.
You fucking freak.
You're a freak like me. it's really cool. Like, just their, like, blunt conversation that they're finally getting to have. And they're actually all, like, reciprocating and answering. And it's not like, I have to run and go kill some frogs. Like, we can't talk about this right now. Like, they finally do have a chance to sit down and talk about it.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. And then, meanwhile, back at this shop, this French guy greets them, this collector. That's it. Thierry?
I don't know. Thierry?
Yeah.
You got it, but I'm going to go off of your lead.
Something like that. He's like, hello, travelers. Welcome to my shop. He's just like, you know, sort of like a, looks like an oddball kind of art collector guy.
Yeah, he very much looks like, to me, a little bit like a French, oh my gosh,
like the artist. Andy Warhol?
That's exactly, yeah. You read my mind. Yeah. Andy Warhol.
Totally. Yeah, because he's just got this like placid face that like isn't really showing a lot of expression. He's got this like weird haircut, basically.
And we'll find out that definitely the way he treats things seems like Andy Warhol.
Yeah, it's like pretty, yeah, like, he's collecting, I mean, odd
Andy
shit,
Warhol collected friends.
Yeah. And there's like his hand extended in the very middle of this panel at the bottom of the page that shows this ring. And then he immediately kind of like he talks about that. He tells Devin to speak English to him, even though Devin like knows French. And yeah, he's like, this ring was worn by Pope Urban VII the day he expunged the curse of the Marquis de Fabre from Ableben. Well, it's a reproduction, of course. The original, not the original, but nice, yes. And Kate corrects him, you mean Pope Sixtus, don't you? Why, yes. Yes, of course. You're, like, you know, like,
yeah.
You get that kind of moment of like, okay, like, I guess he was testing her. Like, at first you're not sure. It's like, are you wrong? And you're, because like at this point, my like hackles go up because I'm like, who's this freak? Like, is he not who he said he was? Is this like not the guy who he's like presenting himself as, because he doesn't know about the history, or he does know the history and he's saying it wrong on purpose to test them? And I think it's the latter.
I think you're right. Yes.
But it's like he's introducing himself again and just being weird in general. So you said, yeah. I'm Dr. Corrigan. Like, and you see like Kate's eyes kind of like narrowing a little bit.
Yeah, I love that shot.
Okay.
Because when she says, I love that. The narrowing a shot of the close-up, but then I love the one on page, the next page where it says, and she's like, Dr. Corrigan, of course, yes, wonderful to meet you, that. And she has put his hand on her shoulder, yeah. And she's very wary now.
Yeah, she's like fully side-eyeing him and, like, you know, just looking, like, her just body, her posture is, like, stiff and, like, getting creeped out. Devin's going to try, he's trying to, like, let the headquarters know what's going on, but his cell phone's not working, there's no reception. Thierry's like, go out there, there's a phone booth. And Devin walks out, kind of like still testing his phone. Meanwhile, back in the shop, Thierry basically continues testing Kate to kind of like see what else she knows. He's like, you know, they're like sort of playfully talking about these different like objects that he has in his shop, seeing like, do you know what this is? Well, yes, I do know what this is, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Until which ends with him pointing out this monkey, and he's like, do you know what this is? It's a werewolf, says Kate, because she does. She knows, like, she told the story to Devin earlier where it's like, yeah, it was probably a, I think he like points out what specific monkey it is.
You mean earlier?
Later, I think he does. But right now he's just like, she turns and says it's a werewolf. And
yeah,
he looks
and
like,
it's to be joke about the history of like, they thought it was a werewolf, it's actually this other animal.
Yeah.
That they'd just never seen before.
Yeah.
So they freaked out. I love how creepy the human clock is. I didn't do any Googling, but that.
That is really weird. Yeah. I like the idea of a kid, Anduron, who was always counting.
Yeah, so he knew what time it was.
And then he had a heart attack at 11 because I guess he was counting too much.
You'd think so.
What a freak.
Everybody's freaks today.
Just throwing out freaks. And then, yeah, so they just kind of had this like back and forth where it's like, okay, maybe he's just a weirdo, but she's getting somewhere with him. Maybe she will get this book. How great would that be? And then it cuts back to Daimyo taking a piece of cake out of the fridge.
Like, yeah, or is it a... I look at it. I don't know why we're going to dissect this. It looks like, to me, those Rice Krispie treats that people will put them...
icing on?
Butter, or they'll put, like, chocolate on top of. Have you ever had those?
That sounds good. No.
That's what it looks like to me.
That sounds great.
Just saying, he's handling that cake. He's not handling it like cake would. I feel like a cake, you got to pick it up from the bottom.
It's a little more delicate. Whereas a Rice Krispie treat, you could like throw it across the room, it would look the same.
Yeah. It's firm.
Either way, I'm hungry. That sounds good. Yeah, so he's like apologizing basically to Johan about what he said. Johan's just like being very diplomatic and like he's, you know, he's not like super offended, I don't think. You just rejected the relativism of death, but Elizabeth makes a point. And then Daimyo's just getting so defensive, like, why do you spend so much time here? It's not like you drink a lot of coffee immediately. He's just kind of like got his walls up the whole time still.
Yeah.
But yeah, Johan's kind of just like continuing to talk about how there is like relative things about death for them. Like their reality is like, yeah, like I'm a disembodied person and you were dead for days. What makes your situation different? And he's like, you know, still not telling them, like, why you want to make a family album?
He's so...
They're like, why? Just tell us. Like, tell us what happened.
Even that, in his response to that, is defensive as well.
Oh, yeah, everything.
He's just like, who says it's a secret?
Yeah. Like, and then he says, you've got the clearance to write to Marine Corps Intelligence. They'll send you a copy of the report. In the dictionary next to the entry for passive aggressive is a picture of you. Like, it's like, go right to the Marines and tell them. Like,
they'll tell you.
They'll give you the report instead of just like, okay, we're your friends now. Just tell us. And yeah, like they continue to kind of go back and forth with that, where finally Liz is just like, leave him alone. Even after all we've been through with him, it's obvious we're still just outsiders to the captain. And he's like,
got him.
Fine. All right. Yeah. And he finally is like, puts his coffee down and is like, I'll tell you guys.
Ooh.
And Liz is like,
he loved
skirt.
Close up. That would be funny if there was a panel like close up on her heels. Like,
yeah. Like, go on.
Okay.
And then it cuts back to Kate and Thierry talking in the shop. Where but they're this isn't a real, like, of course, you know, it's not the real werewolf. It's a mandrill. That's it. Mandrill. But no superstitious Frenchman had seen such a creature in the 15th century.
Yeah.
And then Kate's sort of like defending people back then, where it's like, they weren't superstitious. They were just like going off of what they knew and they just hadn't seen anything like that.
Yeah. If that thing showed up on in your town out of nowhere and you'd never seen it before, you'd fucking freak out.
Yeah. And she's like, I don't think we're really any different when things go against conventional wisdom now. And he's like, oh, yes, you're truly enlightened if anyone wants my opinion. But I have a book to find. And like, we're going further and further. This is like a pretty big shop we're coming to realize. It looks like Dr. Broom could spend a lot of time in here. There's like books piled on top of each other and like old artifacts and...
As I was reading it, I was like, wait, what is going on? Like,
yeah,
if you're
like
paying
weird.
Attention to those panels, you're like, things are getting tighter. There's more clutter.
Yeah.
And it's like, but this is just a small town. What the hell? And you start to get a hint of something else.
A weird place. It's like, does your oddities shop really make that much money that you have this, like, you guys can keep the doors open here? Yeah, he's like leading her back through more and more. You kind of don't see an end to the shop. You just see like the like ceiling, the beams on the ceiling, like going back as far as you can see.
Yeah.
And then outside, Devin's trying to reach anybody. Somebody's using the phone just gabbing away in there, so he can't use it yet. He's asking people if there's another phone, but they ignore him. The woman leaves and he's like, finally, and then goes in.
I think he's a little impatient.
Yeah. I mean, well, he's, you know, he's nervous. He's got to talk to, he's got to let the BPRD know where they are, I'm sure.
For sure.
Yeah. And then Thierry's continuing to lead Kate around the shop. They're like going deeper and deeper. It's like being said. It's like, oh, this place is bigger than it looks from the outside. And then he sort of talks about how, I wish I could see, of course, if I could only think of the world as storage for things, then my collection could finally be complete, yes? But that requires a very communal philosophy of life and property, no? And I must confess that it is not in my nature to share. And he's like saying like this kind of just odd shit about like, things are mine.
Things are mine.
Things are mine. And Kate's like really like comes to this like clearing and like sees how huge this is. And there's like odd bookshelves, like not floating, but like attached to the ceiling in a bizarre way. Like things kind of defy physics in here a little bit, how they're stacked up with each other.
Yeah.
It's just like eerie and weird.
It's very, very eerie.
Not to mention like the stuff in this collection is fucked up. It'll be like a wrapped up tangle of snakes next to a man's hand, and that's next to a rat with a human skull, yeah, and next to a tentacle and like a mechanical eyeball. Is there something wrong? As like Kate is like, what the fuck is this? Like a huge like weird fish skeleton.
I love that panel. Yeah. I think it's one of my favorites.
It's really neat.
The opening up to the space. Terrifying to be in that.
Totally. It's like bizarre.
Your mind can't. I mean, how does your mind even wrap around a bit of it, you know?
Yeah, it like defies logic. This, it's like really like Wonka-esque kind of situation happening now.
Ugh, evil Wonka.
Yeah. And then Devin's outside like, don't put me on hold. Listen, I got to talk to, you know, I got to talk to Manning. And then he sees the area pulling the shade down on the shop. And he's like continuing to talk, but he's like noticing that. And then a closed sign goes up on the window and he's like, I'll call you right back. And this door's locked. He busts in. He smashes the door down, like kicks it down.
Yeah.
And it's an empty small room with one cabinet with a broken window containing a painting of the house that used to sit on the top of the hill with a light on. Yeah.
Creepy as hell.
Creepy, dude. Creepy. He's wow. Like, what the fuck is happening? And that's the end of chapter one.
That's chapter one. And now we're going to get into chapter two immediately.
Crazy.
I love this Universal Machine. As I read it again or read it for the first time and then, you know, did a repeat read for the show.
Yeah.
Man, it's dense.
A lot happens in this story. There's, in these five issues, I feel like they lay so much out.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not that it's not a fun read. It's just like my brain
characters and aspects of characters in this one that's like, oh, I've been hearing about these for a long time, like fan favorite kind of things, where it's like, oh, wow, I just got a lot of info about all of these things.
Yeah.
Like two in particular, one of which is on the cover of chapter two. We see Daimyo surrounded by like skulls and bones and a huge jaguar face behind him.
Yeah. That's,
so I'm like, okay, I'm finally going to see this. Like, yeah, we're going to learn about this, which is cool. And then also Roger's still like just torso.
Yep. His blown away torso.
Yeah, just still there.
I absolutely love this Mignola Jaguar on this cover.
Yeah, it's really cool.
God, Dave Stewart colors on the eyes and the red.
Yeah.
What a, whoever is holding that issue right now in their hands right now, I'm very jealous because it's gorgeous. Beautiful. All right, well, let's just jump in.
Yeah. We see in the beginning of this, of chapter two, Abe writing in like a journal, writing how he just sounds very sad. And he sounds really formal even for Abe in his writing.
Yes.
Which makes me think of Call a lot. And it also starts off with a photograph of Call's wife.
Yep.
So it makes me think like either Abe is like reverting back to this like person, like mentally he's like kind of stuck on that where he's like thinking, am I Carl, but I'm not anymore.
Yeah. Like, is he trying just, and this is one page and there's so much in it.
Yeah. He's like ignoring Liz's phone call and he's like saying that he can't sleep and he might start using drugs to sleep. If my difficulties sleeping persist, I think I shall seek pharmaceutical assistance, which is like very formal for Abe. So it does make me think like, oh, Carl is like taking up space in his brain right now.
Definitely. Or he's just like you said, reverting almost like, am I reverting? Seems like he's not in control of it in a sense.
Yeah. It's just kind of taking over.
But there's a part of me that goes, is he purposely trying to, because he thinks,
will that make him, at least is that an identity?
Yeah.
It's like one answer. It's like, I don't know if I'm fully this person anymore, but at least if I'm that, then I'm something. And instead of this mystery that was just like found in a tube.
Yeah, exactly.
It gives him like some identity.
Or trying to make up for what he did. I don't know. It just seems so, it's just dark.
It's rough.
One page. I mean, and he's in our old robe, which I can, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's writing at Carl's desk.
Yeah, all of that seems so Abe.
Yeah, poor Abe.
Poor Abe. And also you want to be like, shake him out at like,
yeah,
you
on,
are Abe.
Come on,
you're
buddy.
Not, Carl's nothing else.
Yeah.
But well, who
you
got
to get outside, walk around.
Yeah.
I guess this Colorado mountain's too treacherous. You can't like go outside.
Too bad.
And then Liz is cut back to the break room. Liz is like, he's not answering. We should page him. This ain't an emergency, Sherman. Leave him alone.
Like they're just trying to get all of them to listen to.
Yeah. But she's like, I just think we should all be in the same room if you're going to talk about this.
If you're going to talk about this, everybody
should
be
here. You're breaking a record here. Like, you've never spoken about this. He's like kind of joking, like, why don't we get some cameras, sell it online? And then Johan's like, maybe we should record it.
Sit down.
Yeah. So yeah, they're talking about, I love this little part too, where he's like, finally, Daimyo's telling his story about his like origin story, basically. Right. Spring of 2001. I was in Bolivia heading up a platoon on an extraction mission. And then Johan interrupts him immediately. Like, actually in Bolivia below the equator, it would have been autumn. Just shut up, Johan. Like, he finally starts telling the story and Johan has to be like, oh, well, if it was south of the equator, it would.
We've all had a friend
it's
like
so
that.
It's so funny, yeah.
Someone that constantly is like recorrecting. You're like,
oh, well, if it's that, it's like,
shut
okay,
the fuck up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can
it's
I
my
fucking
story.
Tell my story here? Jesus, you asked me. It's so funny. It's like such
it's
a
perfect
little like interjection. And then, yeah, so it cuts to Bolivia and we see like a slightly younger Daimyo leading this platoon, as he said. He's kind of like just basically having this conversation where it's like, they tell me what to do and I go do it kind of situation. Like, he's leading them out into this part of the jungle where I guess like some nuns were kidnapped or something. And they're trying to figure it out. These two go ahead, two of the soldiers or Marines.
I think they're Marines.
So two of the Marines like go ahead to scout this one area as they're like getting closer to where they're supposed to get. And they see a figure that looks like a nun sitting by the water and they reach out to her like, we're here to help. She whips up, turns around and it's a jaguar skull under in like nun's clothing.
Yeah. The ham. What is it called? Habit.
Yeah. Sister Act 2, back in the...
I don't
back
know
in
what.
The habit.
Back in the habit. That's
yeah,
right.
That's a,
back in the habit.
Yeah.
This is Sister Act 3.
Sister Act 3. Yeah.
Sister
Whoopi's Revenge.
Whoopi's Revenge. Wow.
Sister Mary Clarence. That's a good movie.
The first or the second?
Both.
I don't remember the second at all, if I even saw it.
Oh,
I remember enjoying the first.
The second movie is great. Very different, but very good. Okay, here we go.
Right.
So yeah, Daimyo's like, hold fire, like waiting. It's like held up by string, this thing. This like grotesque nun jaguar thing. And then they're suddenly surrounded by people who have like, who are armed with like spears and
yeah, they seem to be the natives or aboriginals. Yeah.
They like shoot an arrow towards Daimyo, but they miss. And then like, okay, Bennett, you know so much. Who the hell are these guys? Hard to say. And then he's talking about how like local folk tales talk about a displaced jaguar cult.
Yeah.
And they're sort of like the boogeymen. Nobody really believes in them, but these guys must be like copying them to scare us. And so they're sort of like, one of the Marines is kind of like, okay, tell us where these nuns are. And he immediately gets shot in the neck with an arrow.
God.
Which is so brutal. All like, and then they just fucking unleash fire.
Yeah, they don't even hesitate.
Yeah, they're like lighting these guys up, this like jaguar cult. And Daimyo's like, fucking stop it. Now we have nobody to question about anything. You just fucking blew them all away. And then something dark starts to like emerge from the jungle.
Ugh.
And they're just like stopped cold in their tracks. And the thing like continues to emerge. And we see like sort of claws kind of dragging it out of the jungle.
What a cool way of using those wispy lines.
Yeah.
Just a line.
It's just like a dark, shadowy figure. Ugh. That's like has no form yet that we can see except for like the claws in the head.
Yeah.
And they're just like frozen looking at it. And then Abe walks in. Excuse me, Liz, you were calling me? Interrupts the story at just this like huge
just when
moment.
We wanted more.
Yeah, exactly. And then cuts back to France where Devin is like trying to talk to the locals like, please, excuse me, like, can anybody help me, basically? Somebody talk to me. My friend is missing. What is the matter with you people? And it zooms in on the painting with the light on in the house. And then, like, on the other side of this window, of this lit window, we see Kate. So she's, like, trapped in there, like, mysteriously kind of trapped in this, like, nowhere place that exists in this town with this guy. Who we're still like not 100% sure who he is, but you basically know who he is if you're, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Paying attention. You're like, oh, well, this is the guy that they, that whose house blew up, who was on the top of this hill before.
Yeah, it's like, all right, yeah. He's still alive.
All right, okay, yeah, now. You're still alive. You live in this sort of like in between area. He's like escorting her into this huge chamber. I don't want to keep you in suspense. We see like all these taxidermied freaky animals.
Yeah.
Kind of like griffin looking things, sort of like a giant horse, crazy hydra.
Yeah.
Crazy big ornate paintings. And then we see a bunch of figures seated at this long table who are all like sort of like, what is that style? Like this old French powdered wig kind of situation, like a Louis XVI kind of thing. Where
yeah,
they're all, like,
I think you're right.
Super like... just dressed up like super ornately and crazy. They're having all these little figures are having fun grunting and stabbing a bird with forks attached to their fingers.
Yeah, they're like almost, I can't, they look vampire, like almost.
Definitely, yeah. They have like vampire, they have like bat noses and little like nubby bat teeth.
They remind me of the demons, even though I didn't watch the show very much, but when I saw them, they remind me of the demons from Buffy. The TV show.
Oh, the vampires?
Yeah, I feel like they remind me of the look of those, of their design from Buffy the Vampire
Slayer. Yeah, their faces
Slayer.
Are all like, they have like these angry looking like foreheads and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much looks like that to
yeah.
me. But they're fucking eating a, they're torturing
Dude,
a bird.
You gotta watch Buffy. It's
all right.
It's really good. And... so Thierry is like, they never seem to tire of that. Like, he's just like, oh, my little friends are so weird and they're having fun. Kate's like grossed out. They continue walking past a painting of the devil. Where are we? You are upset? Yes. I know just that. Like, he's just such a creep, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I without in the harm of making a dumb joke, I just keep thinking this guy needs to get me too. Like, I hate him so much.
He's just bad. And he calls Le Jerk.
Le Jerk. Yeah,
the jerk. He calls Le Jerk.
Le Jerk. It's not Steve Martin.
Le Jerk over. He's like, bring me some wine. And it's this little sort of like bent over figure, Quasimodo looking guy who brings wine over. And Kate's like, no thanks, because she knows not to take candy from strangers.
Yeah.
But then Thierry just yells at Le Jerk and is like, she didn't even try it. She doesn't want it. She's just disgusted by you. Get out of our sight and like kicks him. He's being a real asshole.
Yeah. I love the detail, though, of that little wooden crown with nails in it. So much going off in every little detail of every character in this world, this weird world that we're now trapped in.
Yeah. And he puts on this little hat, too. And now he fully looks like he's like out of his disguise, basically. And Kate calls him Adet de Fabre. So the name of the guy who was there.
Yeah.
Yes, Dr. Corrigan, you are in the court of a dead Marquis de Fabre. Does that really startle you with all you've seen in your career? So he's like, yeah, that's me. That's me. And she's like, well, you were like destroyed 500 years ago. It's pretty cool. And he's like, a man with much to offer and who is a shrewd negotiator can strike a deal for anything. And then it cuts to the painting of the devil. So yeah, it's like, okay, you're up to some evil shit. You're like, you're still alive because of some evil dealings that you did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And he's like, now I'm going to negotiate with you, and like pulls Kate up into a chair. So it's like, okay, this book might not be so easy to get.
No, it's not going to be. Uh-uh. Can't just pull it off the shelf and walk out.
No.
This ain't no library.
It doesn't come with a bookmark for free. Like Skylight Books or something.
Yeah, exactly.
And then cuts back to the break room where Daibyo is like, no, I'm not going to start over again.
I love that.
He's like, I'm just going to pick up where I left off. So, and he does. He's telling the story. The Marines are just blasting gunfire into the jungle, but like they're getting ripped apart, like
yikes,
decimated completely, like arms getting shorn off and stuff, fucking heads getting ripped off, everybody's dying. Daimyo is like, keep fighting, keep shooting. And then like people are like, the Marines are just running off into the fucking jungle.
God, they are obliterated. Mm-hmm. It's disgusting.
Yeah, they're just like torn apart completely. The last Marine who's with Daimyo is like, I guess it left. Do you think we're safe? He's like, fuck no, we gotta call on the radio. And then turns around and it's the fucking nun jaguar who attacks him and rips his face, and that's how his face gets all fucked up.
Oh my gosh.
It's a bad cut.
It's disgusting.
Yeah.
Like,
it's brutal.
They really captured the horror in these moments.
I hope I never get bitten by an animal like that.
It better only be my cute dog, Dot, if I have to get bit.
Yeah.
She's bit my nose before.
Yeah, Poppy bites my nose a lot. Yesterday I was walking Poppy and this big husky was there, like on the sidewalk. And the guy was like, oh, she's friendly. I was like, oh, can I pet your dog? Like, is that okay? He was like, yeah, go ahead. And I was petting the dog and the dog was just like, it was like this huge husky. It was like really excited, but I was just like reached my hand out. And then the dog like kind of mouthed my hand, but it fucking did it so hard. And I was like, ah, fuck. Like I was like, you gotta have a better, like this dog is so big. You gotta train it a little bit. Like this thing, like, and then I walked away and there was like all these red marks on my hand. I was like, thank God I didn't let Poppy like close to this. Like, he would have like swallowed her.
Yeah, man, that guy should take better.
I was just like, or at least know that your dog like is fully gonna bite people.
Yeah.
Like it didn't like break my skin, but I was like, ow, fuck.
It was like, hurt you. That's enough.
I was like, that sucked. I didn't like yell at him or anything. I was just like, all right, see ya.
You should have. Fuck.
I don't know, probably, but. I'm so non-confrontational to the point where it probably like hurts me on a daily basis. I was just like, see ya.
Like, I'm the worst.
With a fucking dog like wound.
His dog could bite my head off and I'd be,
yeah,
like,
and be like, sorry. Anyway, yeah. Seeing this, I'm like, well, fuck, that's worse.
Yeah, fuck getting that much bit off your face.
It would be terrible to get
especially
bitten.
Like it goes under
on
her
this like
cheek?
Soft tissue.
Ugh. God.
And then with a jacked up face, he runs through the jungle, sees one of his like killed soldiers, who's just like half of a guy now, who's like repeating things from the conversation they had earlier in the jungle. He's like hallucinating. He falls and this like darkness is gathering around behind him. He hears like what starts out as nonsense, and then when he wakes up, he kind of like comes to a little bit and sees the decapitated head of one of the soldiers with this fucking little monkey sitting on the head.
With like a kabuki fucking mask.
Who we've seen before in like the file.
Now, like, we're like,
oh, this guy's up to, who is this? This is another big, like, mystery that's continued in this one.
Yeah. Before we get to the next page, which is major.
Yeah.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
And I'm very curious. Do you think this has a little bit of dramatic irony in it? Like, do you think he's telling them every single detail? Or do you think we're getting a little bit more than they know?
At this point, we're like seeing his memory.
Yeah, because I'm wondering. Because
they would talk about this. They'd be like, so who was that monkey?
Yeah, who's that monkey? And also, didn't you pull one of those from our storage?
Yeah, hey, didn't you pull out like a crusty looking version of that?
Because that's what I'm wondering is, how much is he telling them in regards to his memory?
He might be withholding some of this, I think.
I think so too, because, or they would have had to address the fact that, because we've had in the dead, he pulled this thing out.
Or maybe, you know, I guess it's not that crazy to be like, I was in the jungle and saw a monkey or thought I saw a monkey. Like maybe he's not describing every detail of this thing or the fact that he's seen it again or the fact that it was speaking. Like he might have said like, and then I hallucinated seeing my dead friends or something like that.
Right.
But yeah. So yeah, the monkey is like presumably to me speaking in the voice of either Daimyo or one of the soldiers. Calling for assistance, basically calling for somebody to come rescue them. So it's helping Daimyo, sort of, you think, where it's like he's going to hopefully have somebody come save him. And then this enormous foot comes slamming down on the last panel of that page. And then boom. On the next page is just this crazy demonic jaguar creature with a fire tail and white birds emerging from its open chest where its flaming heart is beating.
Ooh.
And these like crazy rib like sort of bone structures are sticking out of its neck and they're on fire too. Like, it's the wildest looking thing. And it's enormous. It's also like, you know, 40 feet tall.
Yes.
And it speaks to Daimyo and says, the old world is your soul. Leave it there. It is old. The new world is life. Take your life. And it like spits out this or like an opening in its mouth starts to like open and an opening in its mouth starts to open.
Like, yeah. It's like there's a
light
coming through.
Light is coming through and it's
the
like,
darkness of his mouth. Yeah.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden he wakes up in his body bag.
Yeah.
Days later, and everybody at the table's like silent for a second.
Like, how would you respond to that?
Yeah. Oh. They're like,
so that's how it happened.
If I'd have known the story would shut you mopes up this tightly, I'd have told it a long time ago. And then, Johan talks about his death dream. So I guess that's how they're if he did tell every detail, maybe it is just like, that was a dream and that happens when people die and stuff like that. Like, what do you make of it? And he's like, death dream, you got a name for it, but then I guess you had one too, huh? Quite a few, actually, which is like horrifying to think of.
Oh, yeah.
That like Johan has to deal with like multiple crazy nightmares like that all the time.
Yeah. And possibly, I mean, I don't know what he is essentially doing, because in this world, if there is like an afterlife and he's supposed to pass on, but he's decided to stay.
Right. Is he just like perpetually in this place of like seeing kind of shit like that all the time?
Yeah. Or being pulled back. Like, is he having to fight whatever force is wanting to make him go forward?
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah,
there.
It's crazy. So that's it. A huge jaguar creature god thing attacked them. And
I like that it's just presented. We don't get all the facts yet. It's just
It's just like, holy shit, it's so crazy looking.
Love
and
that.
Then and then it cuts back to Kate and not Thierry now, whatever his fucking name is.
Fabre.
So now, so now
I'm just gonna act like it's Bill Hader playing
other.
This character from now on.
He kind of looks like him. If they make the movie version of this in another 5 years,
we will cast Bill Hader.
They'll cast Bill Hader. And he's kind of talking about how, like, basically it was his idea to bring you out here so that we could like barter and, you know, I have this awesome collection. It's so great. Don't have this communal philosophy. Here's the book that you were looking for. He pulls out the true record of the workings of the universe, universal machine of the nature and function of celestial bodies. the transmutation of metals and the creation and reconstruction of living things. Now let's talk. And that's the end of chapter two.
Whoa.
He's like, I have the book. This what you want?
Oh my God. And they just, what?
Yeah, it's crazy.
There's so much.
Crazy like cliffhanger. It's like not quite a cliffhanger, but it is. It's like, I got to know what's like, okay. Let's go. Like, I would hate to like have to wait a month to get the next one.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Waiting a month for this would be crazy. Because yeah. I mean, one of them was just a story which had its own finality to it, but it also opens up a lot more, right? Now yeah. We're like, what the fuck is wrong with Daimyo?
Yeah.
Or Daimyo. And then we're just left with like, let's talk is such a fun cliffhanger because the book is right there. And we keep, it's like little bit of like giving her breadcrumbs of like, well, I have it.
Yeah.
Let's see if we have it. Now I do have it, but let's talk because I'm not just giving it to you. So it's like, oh, fuck. What does this creep want?
What do you want, you damn creep?
But wow, what a great two issues. It's so dense.
It's cool for me to finally see Daimyo, like some of that, to have some light shed on that backstory.
Can you imagine, real quick, and we know we bash on it a lot here, what you saw in the movie versus that the amazing visuals that you just sat through for his backstory?
Yeah, I mean, it would be it's hard to say. Like, it's really hard to say because, like, even that, like then in aspects of the movie, they were super like faithful to the book and they were just cramming everything in. It's just like, I don't even know if I would have missed it. Like, I don't even know if I would have missed having Daimyo as a character in the movie. Like, I could have gone without having, like, I don't know. Like, they weren't really that faithful to the book in that new movie, I think.
I agree. I think the more we read, it's just them cramming it versus being faithful. And trying to like actually crack the characters enough and put them on the screen to a degree of like true faithful adaptation and expand them a bit or expand them for that medium.
Yeah. The storytelling just doesn't, it's not like, it's just not the best translation of these stories or characters. Like,
yeah, it's hard. Or they just didn't choose the right way to do it because you have to give and you have to take and whatever.
Yeah.
You have to lose some tough, change things. Just things are going to change no matter what. But
this would be insane to have seen in that movie.
But like, it would have been, it didn't need to be there.
Yeah.
But if you were going to adapt it,
it would be cool though.
Why waste the time on that brief flashback that gave us nothing, which is just like a bunch of images moving in a forest.
Yeah.
Versus if you're gonna fucking go, you might as well give us this.
Yeah, true.
See what I mean? Like, blow our fucking minds.
Yeah. Like, it's right there for you. I've never really seen anything like especially this, like, you know, in a movie.
God damn it. Like, we've had such a great building of Daimyo in the comics because he's been so close to the chest. It took his team to really beg him, in a sense, to actually open up, and he finally does. So therefore, of course, we're going to get a lot. And it's insane in the movie, their characterization of him is like, I'm rough and I'm tough, but immediately I'm just going to tell you about it. And then I'm also, it's going to be vague. Like, what? It's just, I hate comparing because I want to focus on these books, but it's just insane.
I mean, yeah, I think it stands to be compared. They're like, you know, so related.
Yeah.
It's just so cool. Like, it's such a cool thing. It reminds me of, I guess this other thing reminds me of this because this came out for this comic came out first, but The Ritual on Netflix. Have you seen that?
No, but I've heard of it.
It's neat. It has a really neat monster and I don't want to like spoil it too much.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But check it out. It makes you think of this.
Yeah. There's like aspects of it where I'm like, oh, neat. Like, it can be done in a movie in a cool way, but I think it would have to be its own like focused kind of thing. I don't know.
That's great. I love that. Any favorite panels?
I do like images? I like that jaguar a lot. I think it's really cool.
It's so unexpected, the imagery, especially just fits in the world. We've seen all these crazy gods and different animals. It's like, this is something that like, it blows our minds, but also goes, of course.
Yeah.
Fucking of course this thing exists here. Yeah. I love that. I'm with you on that. I think my favorite panels, I love that first in the issue one, the reveal of the space inside the bookshop or the collection.
Yeah.
Fabre's collection, and just the breaking of reality and things just on the ceiling and her just trapped in there. I think that image is just, I love that panel. I think that panel is brilliant.
Yeah.
You can look here again. It's like a Where's Waldo. You could just stare at what is filling up the space. Cause just now, as I turn back to the page, it's like, there's a weird giant hand that has like writings on it. It's like, what the fuck is that thing?
Yeah.
And I love that. I just,
they're like such creepy, weird things. I like this page of Devin on the phone with the BPRD. And then when the, like, when Fabre puts the clothes sign on the window,
mm-hmm.
and like then Devin gets over there, checks the lock, and then kicks the door down. Like, I just like that, the physicality of that, like in that panel. I think it just looks cool.
I do too. And also, I think it's cool because you pointing that panel out, what I really like is that he's not just like a Hellboy who has just like brute force. Yeah. He has to really use, like, he's using his body.
He's like
to
bracing himself on the wall and like. Yeah.
So you get understanding of his own strength level.
Yeah.
But he can still do it.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. Little touches like that. I think my other one is, I love that panel where the black creature emerges from the jungle.
Yeah.
I think that panel is just.
It's cool. The colors are awesome in that one.
Yeah, like, I mean, if you remove the colors, I think it's fine.
Yeah.
But I think Dave Stewart really heightens Guy Davis's work here.
Totally. Especially in comparison to, like, the break room kind of gray walls and stuff of the BPRD.
It's very really cool. Oh, I love it. Just great work all around. And I think you're right, Kate. You said that, like, this thing flows. It's very cinematic. And I think you're right, especially with the density of story that
there's
we're getting.
There's so much in here.
It's like, good Lord. Yeah. They are very, I dare say, I think this is like the most ambitious of theirs yet in the BPRDs. I'm just like, wow. Wow, wow, wow. That said, though, being blown away by this, do you have anything that comes to mind that you want to suggest based on what we've discussed?
I guess the ritual. I don't know if I've already recommended that. I might have.
That's okay.
The ritual, for sure. Check that shit out.
Oh, I think the humor, real quick, I sort of jumped the gun, but I don't know. I didn't have any specific dialogue, but a lot of things you called out I thought were very funny. I think they've consistently kept the humor alive throughout this, even though there's a lot of heavy stuff happening.
Yeah.
My go-to is like rewatch Predator. It reminded me, the jungle scenes remind me of the original Predator.
Oh, you know what movie? Did I recommend this recently? Cobra with Stallone?
We talked about
okay.
We talked about Stallone. You talked about Cobra. Yeah,
Cobra was such a. It's still in my head.
I love it.
It just has cool like one-liners and shit. I think he's like worth. The movie's definitely worth watching. It's great.
That's wonderful to hear.
Yeah,
I love that. There's a lot that was coming to mind as we read this, references wise, but I was just trying to keep it simple, and then I always forget because we keep going, and I'm like, oh, there's so much.
Yeah. Sister Act 1 and 2.
Sister Act 1 and 2.
Of course.
And then as we met Devin, this is a dumb thing and maybe a tangent. I kept pulling up actors that I think if they ever did a BPRD show, who should play Devin. And I have my two pitches.
Ooh.
My two pitches are Justin Smith, who was from the recent Pokemon movie.
The main character?
Yeah. I think Justin Smith.
He would be good, and he would probably be a little older by then.
Yeah. I was thinking, he could be a little older by then. Or, if you want to take another fun turn, I was going to pitch Sam Richardson from Veep and Detroiters.
Oh my God, he's so funny.
He's so funny, and I was like, yeah, he could be like a fun BPRD agent.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think he's capable of playing in that realm, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know why that popped in my mind, but I was like, I kept seeing those two actors as we read this.
That's funny.
Devin. And then I was like, hey, if you haven't seen either of them, I can't really suggest anything from Justin Smith because the movies of his I don't like. But hell, check them out, Jurassic World and Pokemon I never saw. But
he was good in Pokemon.
That's great.
Pokemon
never
was
saw
a
it.
Cute movie.
But if you haven't seen Veep or Detroiters, definitely check that out. Sam Richardson's
Detroiters
so funny.
Is so funny, dude. He's great. I was in his house once.
Why?
I was helping. I don't know if you want to put this on the podcast, but I was helping Haley Mancini shoot a sketch, and she, I guess, is friends with him from back in the day, and they just shot the sketch in his house.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Great.
Sorry. Yeah, maybe that's don't fine. Put that in. I don't know.
Well, I mean, we didn't give an address.
I don't want to creep him out. Yeah.
He's not listening.
No, of course not.
But that's it. That's great. I think this is a very dense and enjoyable read. And yeah. I'm excited to see where this goes because there's so much on the playing field right now. We're getting backstory, which they're hinting at. And what we're going to get to is some backstory of Johan.
Yeah.
As well as what will Kate get from this fucking creep?
Yeah.
Will she succeed at that? Will she get free or whatever is about to, I don't know what's about to happen, of course.
Yeah.
We do read ahead, but you can't tell from just this cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, what's going to happen with Roger? Is he going to return? Because she's putting herself in danger for Roger's
sake. They're killing characters. Like there is a world where Kate could die here. Like it definitely feels more dangerous now.
Yeah, I agree. And then what the fuck's happened with Abe? Little lonely Abe / Cole.
He's writing sad letters to himself, little journal entries.
Yeah. Big old Victorian weirdo. Poor guy. We want to hear your thoughts about the Universal Machine and anything else we've covered. You can hit us up by emailing us at awcrapahellboypodcast@gmail.com. Also, you can follow us on Instagram at @awcrapahellboypodcast, Twitter, @awcraphellboy. And before we get out of here, you got these listeners a little, we're coming down to probably the last ever prompts.
Yeah.
Because we're going to retire this at the end of the season. So. We've decided we're retiring it after season
although
three.
Now I'm doing Inktober. I can't believe I actually made it so far, like four days in.
Fucking awesome.
Thank
I've seen
you.
Them.
I feel like I really need to go back and do my own fucking drawing prompts.
Maybe
like,
you should.
I feel like a real bomb.
I haven't done them either.
Oh, man.
You're the artist, though.
Yeah, I really am feeling pressure to finally do it.
Great,
I guess we could draw like, I want to incorporate like Daimyo's character, maybe the jaguar or something. Just draw, I don't know, just draw that fucking jaguar. How cool he is. I don't know. That's not a good prompt.
Well, who cares? You're excited about that jaguar.
Yeah, I think he's so cool.
This week's, we want to see your inversions of the jaguar imaged god that he saw before waking up, reborn. So that's this week's # right-handed draw prompt, Daimyo's Jaguar Vision.
Yeah.
If you do contribute to this week's or any previous, even when after we retire this segment, you can do it at any time in the future. But if you do that, please tag us on Instagram. Use the # right-handed draw. That allows us to repost it on our feed so our followers can check out your art.
Yeah.
And that in the hopes that they'll follow you forever and you'll become a big, rich artist. Yeah. That's our goal. You become big and rich.
A big, rich jerk.
No!
I mean artist.
But that's it.
Yeah.
Again, that's # right hand of draw. Thank you again for listening. We do really appreciate you and we appreciate all your contributions via email and following us online. We'll see you next week with the continuation of the Universal Machine. That'll be part two, where we'll cover chapters 3 and 4. So see you then, and remember...
We love you.
Hi, I'm Winston.
And I'm David.
And we're the hosts of a new podcast on Campfire Media called Try It, You'll Like It.
And on our podcast, we have our guests eat a food they hate one last time.
And we have so many crazy guests.
We got amazing chefs.
We have killer comedians.
Bakers.
Candlestick makers.
Distillers.
Brewers.
Food writers.
Oh, they're writing about food.
Ooh, they're probably having some food while they're writing about that food.
Yeah, because we're eating food and they're eating food and you're listening to It Happen.
All you ASMR hits, enjoy. Chomp chomp.
So check it out every Thursday at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Mmm, that was good.
Campfire.